Coming up on today's show...
People want to be associated with a brand and go and see the artist live that they love. You know, that's not going to happen with an AI artist because it's basically, it's digital air. You know, there's nothing to go and see.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the greater Los Angeles area, my guest is one of the most prolific and successful artists on the contemporary urban jazz scene. Last month, he released his 18th full-length album. He is touring extensively in 2026 with dates from May to October. A British artist and producer with 15 Billboard Top 10 hits, he has had 10 Billboard number ones as an artist, producer, or co-writer. His career includes having founded his own record label, worked for the BBC, and a number of theatrical orchestras in London's West End. Upon his move to America, he became a top session player after recording with everyone from BB and CC Winans to Jody Watley and Carol Bayer-Sager. In recent years, he has released a Live in London album, as well as a Standards Project tracked at Abbey Road. He has well over 316,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where his top five songs alone have a combined total of well over 44 million streams, and his YouTube channel has well over 25 million video views. You have been hearing a song of his called Hollywood Hustle. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Chris Standring.
Bruce, how are you? It's very nice to be here.
Chris, thanks ever so much for making time to talk with me today. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
Let's get started by having you share first all about the song of yours that was just playing called Hollywood Hustle.
Hollywood Hustle, yes. Well, that's a song I wrote a couple of years ago, very much influenced by the 70s kind of soul funk bands like the Ohio Players and Tom Brown, for instance. There's a little bit of funkin' for Jamaica in there. I mean, I'm really into that period of time, and... it ended up being a single, and we did a video for that song, which is very much related to my entire move here to California. So you just got to go and see it, I think, really, to understand it.
There's a guest that I had on recently that we played an instrumental song during the opening, and I'll pose the same question to you, which was, if the song had lyrics, what would the story be that was being told? In Hollywood Hustle, in your case?
Well, it's literally about that. It's about the coming to Hollywood and joining the hustle to be successful, So, which is what the entire video is all about. It's about me landing, you know, getting off a bus with a guitar, sweating bullets, not knowing what the hell this town's got to offer me, and fighting my way through it to, you know, amongst the saturated competition, to see if I can make anything of myself, you know.
Should we be surprised that it took you this long, for as long as you have been in America, to only now write a song about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, songs come out the way they come out, and when they come out, it's hard to just decide to write something. And also, This is an instrumental piece of music, you know. It's like, you know, if it was a song, perhaps I could have decided to write it some time ago, but You know, it's instrumental, so it what comes out when
yeah,
it does.
Great answer. That song, Hollywood Hustle, is off the new album Time of Change that just came out last month. Congratulations on that, Chris. Wow, 18th full-length album. I gotta tell you, I would not say this about just anyone, But wow, guitar very reminiscent of George Benson. I've been a fan of his for years, and arrangements that I know you're particularly proud of. Tell us about Time of Change.
Well, thank you for the compliment. George Benson is, no question, one of my big heroes. Time of Change is really a very nostalgic journey through time. And, you know, much like the video of Hollywood Hustle I was telling you about, the whole album has got this nostalgic feel. And it's about me coming to this age, you know, and time of my life, looking back at maybe the golden years, maybe not, looking back at my childhood. And but of course, you know, looking forward too. I mean, I got married a couple of years ago, and I'm starting this brand new chapter in my life, and we're moving. So the album title is more to do with the changes reflected in my life than anything surrounding us. But of course, you know, the world is going through changes too. So it's quite apropos, I think.
I think the guest that I was referring to that I asked if the song had lyrics, what would the story be? I think that was Lisa Hilton last month. The week before that, I interviewed John Beasley, and I'm going to ask you a similar question, Chris, as to something that John and I talked about, because he was talking about a piece that was rather nostalgic also. I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think that you might self-produce. Where I'm going with this is, when you do something nostalgic, how do you kind of balance making it sound like it's from a particular era while also knowing that, hey, in 2026, the tools are much more different and a bigger palette than they were back then?
Well, much like my previous answer, it's not like I decide to record it and write something with a nostalgic feel. It generally happens the other way. So, for instance, some music comes out and I'll start writing it, and suddenly I'll go, wow, that sounds a little familiar. And I'll capitalize on what that familiarity might be. It might be very subdued, not clear to me at all, but I'm just going with where the music takes me. And suddenly I'm going, oh, that's what that reminds me of, that time period. And all of a sudden I'm looking back at my childhood and all the music that I listened to back at that time, you know. So before you know it, I've got a couple of songs coming out like that, and the whole album takes on this theme that I just capitalize on. Really, you can't really force it. It has to. You're literally just reacting to things that are coming out in real time.
And am I safe to assume that you self-produce?
Yes, I do. I've been a producer since I think 2008, and I actually love producing. There's something very well, there's a few answers to that, I think. I mean, one of the things is I don't have to pay a producer. And the other thing is, you know, producing is great fun. You get to oversee a whole project. It's literally like, you know, starting to write a book from nothing and then, you know, just seeing it through to the end. It's a great process. I love it.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. I think I always consider the alternative, which is an artist saying, you know what, I can produce. I do produce, but this time I just want to be the artist. I would love to have someone else's input and let them take the reins, and all I got to do is just come in and perform. Has that ever been the case with you, where you've tried that out and said, I'm going to stick with producing on my own?
You know, it's an interesting question. I would actually be very open to the right producer. I just don't know who that person would really be for my music. My music has become so branded with my own stamp on it. I actually don't know if I could hand over those reins and be super comfortable with the way it came out. Maybe I would. You know, maybe it's just me being a control freak.
No, this is fascinating to me, because I'm hearing what you're saying, and it's almost like, well, if that's going to be the case, if I'm just going to hire someone to do exactly what I want, then I should just stick with doing it myself.
Well, especially if I'm capable of doing it. But there is something about a different perspective when you have somebody else saying, no, don't play that, or you know, what was wrong with that take, or let's do one more take. But of course, if I'm going, well, that was the take. I mean, I'm not going to do better than that.
Yeah.
And then if somebody's saying, well, you know, I think we need to get this side of you, you know, I would see myself sort of battling a little bit with a producer, because I work so quickly Like I'm one of these guys who I commit really, really quickly because I know how to flesh things out very quickly, and it doesn't really lose the creativity by doing that. For instance, I'm not auditioning a million ideas before I commit to something. And I think the idea of working with a producer who does do that would drive me up the wall.
Yeah, and if you give it a shot and all that comes from it is on one song, he says, what if we tried stand-up bass on this? And you go, I like it. Yeah. Let's do it. Then you go, okay, one song in the whole album, we had stand-up bass that I wouldn't have thought of myself. Like that's what I just paid him thousands of dollars for.
Yeah. But, you know, the other side of it is, what if a producer comes in and suddenly I'm selling a million records? I mean, it's fantasy now at this time of the world. But do you see what I'm saying? I was just reading about David Foster, for instance, that he produced Chicago's record. And before David Foster came in, their last record sold 100,000 units. And he comes in, and they hated working with him.
Mm.
And he sold 7 million records for them. So what do you know? There's that, isn't there?
Yeah, wow. That's a very interesting dynamic. My gosh. Wow. Well, I had said that there were arrangements on Time of Change that you're particularly proud of. Since I am talking about arrangements, let's get into another facet of creating not only this music on the new album, but just your original music on the whole. I would love to hear what your songwriting process looks like in 2026 and maybe where it has evolved from.
That's actually a good question. Well, my favorite type of writing is if I'm just sitting outside in my backyard with an acoustic guitar and some manuscript paper and a pencil and an eraser, and I'm literally singing a melody over a chord progression that I'm, you know, just stumbling upon, and I write that melody down, and that's my favorite way to do things, because if a simple melody and a simple chord progression sounds good acoustically, I can go anywhere with it and make it sound that much better. You know, I have written many songs where I'm literally just sitting at the keyboard, maybe programming a groove to give me some inspiration. And I've done that a bunch of times, but it's not my favorite way to do things, because you're so reliant on production before the melody and the harmony is kind of cemented that way. I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do it, but of late I tend to be a bit more old school, because with a finished song written out, I can literally go to into my studio and take it in a million ways to flesh it out, and that's much more fun to me, you know.
But as old fashioned as you might be, and you do have pencil and eraser and paper there, do you have a phone that's recording so that as you're singing these melodies, you're sure that you're capturing exactly so you don't miss anything?
You know, I've never done that.
Mm.
Whenever I work with singers, they come over and they do that all the time. I've never once done that, and it's because I can write music out really, really quickly. Whatever the melody is, I can scribble it down really quick. So I actually prefer to do it that way.
You say you're scribbling it down. Is it the Nashville number system? Is it you're just writing letters of chords? Are you actually writing music notes? What does that look like on paper?
Yeah, I'm writing the music notes with the rhythms.
Wow.
With the chords on top.
Wow.
So, and I can scribble it out really quickly. I mean, as fast as I can write, you know.
Has that always been the case, or has it evolved from something very... Wow, wow.
No, I've always done it. I've always been able to do it.
Mm.
And I like it. You know, it keeps me on my toes musically as well. I mean, look, there's no right or wrong way to do it, as I say. And I think having a voice recorder is just as valid. I mean, you're actually going to, in a way, it might be better, because you're going to listen back to the exact thing that caught your inspiration.
Yeah.
Whereas I'll write down the rhythm exactly as I played it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not harking back to that initial inspiration. I'm literally just having to read what I've written in order to get back to it. Which, by the way, is usually perfectly good enough, because, I mean, you know, if I can read what I wrote and it sounds good again, then it's good, right?
Well, it's worked to the tune of 15 Billboard top 10 hits and 10 Billboard number one. So yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Folks, as this episode of the podcast comes out, I am in Las Vegas attending the NAB show, recording three interviews for the podcast, meeting with my client, and seeing some other folks. I will be flying out this Saturday night, April 25th. So if you're in Las Vegas and hearing this the day it comes out, email me via podcast at nhte.net or DM me through the at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account, and hopefully we can meet up. I am always interested to meet listeners of this show in person to say thank you, take a picture, chat a bit about the podcast, and just get to know you a little. I am anticipating two more such opportunities next month. Keep listening to Now Hear This Entertainment and reading the free weekly e-newsletter for details on the cities and the dates in May. For that matter, write to me via podcast at nhte.net for a mailbag segment on one or more upcoming episodes of the show so I can share with the audience your name, your location, and whatever you want to contribute, a question for me to answer, or maybe an interview you particularly enjoyed. I want to give you opportunities to interact with the show, whether that is meeting out on the road or reading on the air something that you sent in. Chris, I mentioned in there about my leaving Las Vegas this coming Saturday, but let's tell people about Sunday. Well, Sundays, plural, and what you and your wife are doing.
Oh, yes. We have started a YouTube show that happens every Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And it's really a creative project that we started because we're traveling around the world all the time, doing shows for the most part. So it was Eric and my wife's idea to start recording it and making a show, you know. And it's kind of a look inside, what goes on behind the scenes and at rehearsals and before the show and meeting the band, and but it's also to do with our lives as well as we travel. So it's called Love, Miles, and Music because it incorporates all three of those things.
Well, I love the idea of a YouTube live for the reason that during the pandemic, every artist understandably went live anywhere and everywhere, Facebook live, YouTube live, Instagram live, TikTok, that kind of thing. And then the world opened up and everybody forgot about it and they went back to the actual venues, and there's such a great opportunity there, such a great resource. And just kind of how I was saying that I can't be everywhere, I can't meet everyone in all the cities that I go to and the cities I don't go to. You do tour a lot, but there's going to be cities where people would love to see you and they go, well, if I can at least sit and watch him live on YouTube with his wife and feel that I'm getting a special show, I love that you and her are doing this.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Now, it's not—it's certainly not a reality show, and we're not, you know, sort of making up stories in order to create drama. It really is—it's more like a vlog. But of course, as a musician and a producer, I've underscored everything with music, so it has a thread and a journey that it takes you through from beginning to end on each episode, you know. And of course, you know, we're desperate to become experts at this as well. So we're learning as we're doing it and having a great deal of fun, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's that expectation, right? If it's Chris Standring, people want to see Chris perform. If you do an entire YouTube live and you don't pick up the guitar, I think people are going to scratch their head and say, why didn't he play?
Yeah, and in some of the episodes, I'm not playing at all, you know, because, I mean, I'll give you a bit of inside information. I had a hernia surgery earlier, just a few weeks ago, and I'm completely repaired, but I took a bunch of time off because you can't lift anything for a while. So there's no shows until May, and so we're making shows about us, like sort of doing different things until that time. I mean, there's plenty of shows about the music as well, but it's about our real lives authentically. So if I'm not doing a show, then we're doing something else.
I see. Well, it's interesting to me that you are doing the YouTube live with your wife and everything you just described, because we do often hear the need for work-life balance. The YouTube live thing is new, so I'm not going to let you slide by with that as your answer. How do you balance life, Chris? Music, business, relationship?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I do balance life. I mean, I certainly try to these days. I will say that for many, many years, I was absolutely defined by music, and I was driven and ambitious, you know, still am to a point. But things have definitely changed over the years. I've mellowed out a little. I mean, my work ethic hasn't slowed down, and my love of music hasn't changed, but just the way I perceive it is a little different now. You know what I mean? Like, I remember 20 years ago, I would be staring in front of a computer for hours on end, literally from morning till night, learning and researching and putting my business online and things like that, you know. I'm not really so interested to do that these days. Mm. You know, I want to, for instance, at the end of the day, at, let's say 6 o'clock at night, I'll come out of the studio and I just want to spend time with my wife and the dogs. You know, we go for a walk, we make dinner and have a glass of wine, that kind of thing. And I want that clear definition of work and then, you know, domestic time.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I also have to believe that you're at a point in your career where you can also be choosy. Whereas 30 years ago, you probably were more in a mode of, I'll take almost any opportunities that come my way. And now you're at a point in your life where you say, I can be choosy, and thus it does help with the work-life balance.
I think that's absolutely right. I think back in the day, there was a sense of desperation that keeps you basically working and studying and practicing and writing and figuring out ways to make more money and things like that, you know. So you're absolutely right. It's, you know, I'm definitely much older now. And as I said, I've mellowed out. I've met a lovely woman and we're doing this thing together, and I'm still doing my music, and I'm not done by any means at all. But yet, I think the word is comfort. I've got a little comfortable, which is quite a nice place to be in a business where it's very rare that people are comfortable.
Well, and again, Hollywood hustle. And on that note, you talked about this, the following a little bit when we talked about that song, but we've not really talked about your backstory. In the intro, I made reference to your moving from England to America. That was actually 35 years ago, February 1991. In the lead up to today, you told me that looking back on it, that was a crazy idea. Why do you feel that way? And what are maybe some memories you want to share?
Well, it was a crazy idea because, well, what was I thinking? I mean, it's fine looking back on it in hindsight right now, going, okay, that clearly was a good idea. Mm-hmm. But what if it hadn't worked? Mm. I mean, I actually know plenty of people that have come over here during the last 35 years that have tried to do what I did and have gone back, and they've either decided that it's not for them or it's too difficult, or, you know, they missed the work possibilities where they were. But, it seems like a good idea because it worked out. Mm-hmm. But if I go back to the time when I did it, it was crazy. You know, I mean, coming to Los Angeles and trying to bat in this highly competitive league where, you know, the finest musicians in the world reside and work, and I want to be a part of that, you know, it is odd. But I'm glad I did it.
Are there some memories of things that you did that, you know, I really should have been doomed, Bruce? I can't believe I did X, Y, or Z. Or were you fortunate enough that things, you know, clicked relatively quickly, all things considered?
They didn't actually click quickly. I mean, when I first came here, I booked a bunch of shows from London so I could come here and do some gigs. You know, I was doing sort of reconnaissance trips here for a number of years trying to make something happen. And then in February 91, I booked about five shows and a seminar at Musicians Institute. And I booked all my favorite players. And I mean, it's a very bold thing for me to do. But, you know, I could play. I knew I could hang with pretty good players. And I had been doing that in London for a long time. So I was getting fairly confident. And a friend of mine said in London, Chris, you've got more gigs in LA than you've got in London right now. Why are you coming home?
Wow.
So I slept on that overnight. And I decided, you know what? I'm moving to LA. Whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. So I sold everything. I mean, you name what, like I had... I sold a record player. I sold all my albums. Everything that I had, all my guitar effects pedals.
Wow.
And I sold my car and got rid of my flat. And the reason I did this, Bruce, is because I knew that if I didn't sell everything, it would give me an incentive to come back and I would feel like I had failed. I wanted to give myself no reason to fail, you know?
Wow.
And that's what I did. And I knew things were going to get tough over here, which they did very quickly.
Mm.
And, you know, you can make a splash and everybody knows who you are, for instance. And then all of a sudden, then what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, you play those five shows and you go, okay, those five shows were great, but now what do I do?
Yeah, now what I do? So I had to literally start again. But, you know, I mean, I did it and I eventually, a few years later, I got some breaks. And before you know it, I got my own record deal and here we are.
Fantastic. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the greater Los Angeles area by guitarist, recording artist, producer, songwriter, and arranger Chris Standring. Visit his official website at chrisstandring.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talking about his new album just released last month called Time of Change. His albums are available on his website, CD, vinyl, and or digital download. Lots of tour dates for Chris coming up from May to October, from the West Coast to the East Coast and points in between. Check the tour section of chrisstandring.com for dates and location. Social media-wise, look at the bottom of his website for logos, links to follow Chris on Facebook, X, and Instagram, plus the YouTube channel that you heard him talking about for the Sunday Lives with his wife. And yes, you heard me reference the big numbers back in the intro. So do give Chris a follow on Spotify as well. Meanwhile, I was mentioning that as this episode releases, I am in Las Vegas. However, I realize, as I said earlier, I cannot be everywhere. And so in an effort to connect with audience members in locations I will not get to, I invite you to join me online for a virtual coffee. On my podcast website, nhte.net, there is a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button that will allow you to do exactly that. Well, you can buy more than one if you're so inclined. You will see others before you who have done so, the messages that they have written to me there, as well as the replies that I posted back to them. It is a nice way for you to let me know that you appreciate the work that I am doing with this show every week, every month, more than 12 years now. Chris, we are just meeting, so I'm sticking my neck out a bit here with this, but I said back in the intro that you founded your own record label. On the present day landscape, is there a need for record labels and the like?
Well, I think there is definitely a need for a record label if you're not signed to a label. I mean, you still need to be able to put albums and music out through the distribution system. So as soon as you do that, you are, in fact, a record label owner. I mean, I going back before 2008, I had like four record deals, and I learned very, very quickly that I would like to be keeping all that money that they're keeping from me.
Mm.
So eventually I was actually one of the first in my genre to do it, and it's really, really paid off. So, I mean, I actually like the business side of music, that I'm very sort of right-brained, left-brained. And I'm a perfect guy to do it. Now, I mean, I've only recently started to sign other artists to my label. I mean, I had basically my label for years was just to put out my own records. And ostensibly it still is, but now I'm signing artists as well because I can. And I've got the distribution system to do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think... that's about the size of it.
I think what you're saying is that when you launched it many years ago, your sole focus was, as you said, I'd rather keep the money than see the labels keep it, so I can do this for myself, meaning that at the time, you were doing it with that focus, not, and someday I'll sign other artists to the label. It sounds like that's something that only more recently you decided, hey, I can also add this on.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that I was open to signing other artists years ago, but I just couldn't find anything that made any sense to me. And my business model changed a little bit over the years because it's become such a singles-oriented market. When I'm signing artists, for the most part, I'm not really releasing albums on them. We're just doing singles and trying to get radio play and sort of jumpstart these artists' careers. And, you know, some of them are not brand new artists either, but we're still doing singles because, you know, unless you do have a pretty branded following and, you know, people who want to buy albums, albums are tough to sell these days. So it's a bit easier to stick to singles and just keep doing singles, you know.
But if you are a new artist, what does it take not only to get Chris Standring's attention just to listen to the music, period, but what do you need to hear to say, yeah, I like what this person's doing. I can get behind this.
That's the multi-million dollar question. Because it is because, for the most part, I'm not thrilled with what I hear, especially in the genre I'm in. I'm not a big fan of this genre musically. I mean, I tend to be a bit on the fence and on the perimeters from a lot of other artists. I tend to use the marketplace to market my own albums and my music and get heard, etc. But I'm not super comfortable with that music. I don't want to say too much because a lot of them are friends of mine, but I tend to exist in a little bit of a bubble musically. I think everybody knows it too. But I have to really have some affinity with an artist musically to get behind them. And I think the one thing that all my artists do have in common that I sign is that they're all really, really top-level musicians, and then, you know, a lot of people in this genre, in the contemporary jazz genre, then they're not really jazz players, they sort of R&B influenced players, and I tend to come from more of a schooled background harmonically, and, you know, I come from bebop and classical music, and I like that affinity when I sign other artists. You know, I mean, for instance, I'm working with a fabulous trumpet player. I'm putting out his single in a couple of weeks. His name is Gabriel Mark Hasselback. He's a really, really wonderful trumpet player from Canada. And he's as good as any of them, and he can really, really play his instrument. So that's just an example of, you know, I want to work with people who can really play at the end of the day.
So while we're there, let's continue with your Chris Standring State of the Music Industry address, if you will. Just share with us more from your perspective about the music business today and how things might be moving, certainly the growing influence of AI and the future for artists.
Ooh, that's a great question, too. You know, I have thought about this a little bit. I think AI is definitely scaring people, but take an artist like, well, myself, actually. If I've been around for all these years and putting records out and playing shows that people want to come to, that's not really going to change. People want to be associated with a brand and go and see the artist live that they love. You know, that's not going to happen with an AI artist because it's basically it's digital air. You know, there's nothing to go and see. So I think provided you're a substantial artist with something to say, but more importantly, with something that people want to hear and respond to, I think there's always a future. But we've just got to navigate the waters differently these days because, you know, we are in competition with AI, but it's a different kind of competition. I think there's much more problem in the pop music world because it sounded like AI for years to me anyway. So it seems quite obvious that they're going to compete. But I think jazz is a different animal. I think I will give you one quick example. I did go on an AI site recently and I wrote in a prompt. I said, write me a song in the key of C minor in the style of me, you know. Mm. And what came out, I thought, well, that sounded pretty good. It sounded nothing like me, but it sounded good. Now, is good enough? This is the thing.
Yeah.
It's easy to be good, but it's still the enemy of great, you know, as they say.
Yeah, you very much have to look inwardly then to say, you know, I'm trying to be authentic. I'm trying to be true to myself. And if I put this out, number one, you know, I'm going to have to admit that I used AI. But number two, am I comfortable with saying it's good enough instead of it's great? But I love the beginning of your answer that, you know, nothing is going to change about Chris Standring after all these years. You go see him live, you buy his music, you know what you're going to get. And yeah, maybe you tell someone, oh, I use AI, and they go, oh, what? And you say, let me finish my sentence. I was using it recently for market research to see, you know, where maybe have I not tried to go and perform, or, you know, where is jazz, you know, really seeing a big uptick? So, you know, there's certain uses for it. But yeah, I love that start of your answer that, you know, look, AI, sure, it's a thing these days, but Chris Standring is still going to be Chris Standring from 1 year to the next, 5 years to the next.
That's right. And that's true of any individual person. I mean, you can't really replicate an individual human person, you know, provided they're nurturing their own artistry and they're, you know, they're learning and getting better and becoming great and improving and building their following. You know, it's we have issues we've got to deal with clubs going away and, you know, promoters getting a bit more fearful of investing money and things like that. But there will, as long as it's a demand for what you're doing, there will be an outlet to go and do it somehow and make money, you know.
But while you're looking into your music business crystal ball, what about the future for instrumental music, particularly your genre, of course?
Well, that's really interesting and possibly frightening. But again, I think it's about the individual person just doing their thing and nurturing their creativity and building their following. And the business, I mean, my feeling is if the contemporary jazz world went away, my career wouldn't go away because I've nurtured it and I'm here and I'm making stuff happen. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I think it's more difficult. That question pertains more to new artists because they want a playing field to work within, and I totally understand that. But I think once you get, you know, to a certain point and you become established and successful, you're off to the races on your own. It doesn't matter what's going on around you, you know. So the question is, you need to get to that tipping point where you don't have to worry about what's going on. But, you know, we do need places to play. It would really be helpful to have radio stations who play the music. If all that changes, then things do become more difficult. Mm.
Well, never mind the others now. Let's talk just about Chris Standring. You've been doing this for a long time now with good success. I feel like we already know the answer to this since you've got tour dates from May to October across the U.S. You just put out your 18th album. But rather than me speak for you, how do you feel your future looks for touring and for recording?
Well, I mean, my feeling is I feel like I'm just getting started, to be honest.
Wow.
And that's clearly not the case. but I feel just as invigorated and enthusiastic about music. And it seems like every time I make a record, they still get better and I still have things to say without being repetitious. And I know for a fact that I get bored musically really quickly. So until that repetition starts to set in, I'll keep going and I'll just keep trying to do it and, you know, improve things and, you know, get better. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's all therapy for me. I'm just trying to become a better musician and a better writer and a better orchestrator and a better arranger. Mm. You know what I mean? And so I see some trajectory going north, and there's every reason to get up in the morning, you know.
But for the artist who says, I wish I was in the same place that he is, I find that I do get burned out, and it is starting to get to be not as much fun for me anymore. Is that a hallmark of, well, guess what? I think it's time to find something else to do. Or is it, no, Bruce, they just need to take, you know, 6 months off or a year, however long it takes to feel excited again?
Well, I can't speak for anybody else. I mean, you have to do what you have to do, really. But I do understand it. You know, if you've made a lot of records, you've toured, you know, there's a lot of people, specifically my age and a little bit older, that are saying, boy, how much longer can I do this? You know, how much longer can I be delayed at airports and miss flights and spend nights in airports and, you know, have to stay in crappy hotels because I wasn't expecting to be here and all the others are sold out. You know what I mean? Is that there are these situations that you've got to navigate through. And as you get older, the fun stuff, of course, is playing the music,
sure,
and getting on stage. But that's such a tiny part of what this business is all about. You know, most of it is not glamorous at all. And it's all those things I've just talked about. So I get it for anybody that says, I've either got to slow down, I've got to take some time off. But most musicians can't just give up. They just either change and adapt, and we're like kids with our toys at the end of the day. It's hard to put down.
But I love that you did focus on elements of the business away from the stage and away from the studio, because I think for the young artist who only has stars in their eyes and is leaning in going, okay, he's going to give me the magic sauce now. Chris is going to talk about where to find inspiration and how to make sure the well doesn't run dry of song ideas. It's important for them to hear about the delayed flights and about the hotels that are really not too terrific.
Yeah, and there's lots of them. I mean, what I've learned about traveling, you know, especially these days, if I'm doing a show on the East Coast, I mean, if I can get a direct flight, I have to do that, because just one layover can make you miss your flight. And if the venue is in a small town where there's like three flights a day or something, you can't miss a flight. Mm. So things like that, you do learn. But I mean, also, things are out of your control that sometimes you just can't do anything about it. And it is what it is, you know.
We're in the home stretch here, and one thing we did not talk about was education. Thoughts from you, Chris, about the necessity thereof?
Yeah. Well, I am somebody who is pretty educated musically. I went to music college, although I pretty much spent the entire 3 years practicing at home. And it was an excuse for me to do that. You know what I mean? My feeling is, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it anyway.
Mm.
Meaning, if you're going to be successful, if you're really going to be a great player, you have that inner drive to do it, whether you're going to music college or not, because you have that fascination. In fact, it's my definition of talent. It's, you know, it's the fascination to learn and need to pick up the guitar to figure out this one thing that you couldn't figure out yesterday.
Mm.
So, I mean, put it this way. Do you think Wes Montgomery would be a better player if he went and studied with another guitar player? Or, I mean, you know, all the great players were self-taught for the most part. I mean, there were people that obviously went to Berkeley, you know, and are great players, but it's not necessary, I think. As I said, for me, it was the time allotted that, you know, was an excuse for me to sit down and practice for 3 years and have it all paid for. You know?
I like that. You mentioned some of the greats. I'm someone that is a glass half full kind of person, so I've never liked the expression, don't meet your heroes. Do you have a story, Chris, of a hero that you met that is an absolute highlight for you?
Yeah, well, I do subscribe to that theory, too. I do remember, you know, Jeff Beck was and still is a massive hero of mine. I mean, I don't sound anything like him, but perhaps in my earlier days I might have a little bit more when I was playing that kind of music. But I remember going to see him at the Universal Amphitheatre probably 20 years ago, and he put on the most amazing show. And I don't know how I managed to... I must have gone with a friend who had a backstage pass or something. Anyway, we went backstage, and I met him. I shook his hand, and it was... Do you know sometimes when you shake somebody's hand and they, it's like just really limp?
The dead fish, they call it.
Not firm. It's just really just they put their hand there. And I went, oh, what? Jeff, no. In my mind, obviously, I didn't tell him that, but I thought, oh, I was so disappointed, you know. I mean, that's as much as I ever got to meet him. It's not like we had a chat, you know. He just said, nice to meet you. That was it, you know.
Do you have one that's counter to that? That is, you know, the person couldn't have been nicer and it couldn't have been a better experience?
Yes, I do. Well, Pat Martino is another a hero of mine. And I remember I was doing a show in Philadelphia a number of years ago when Pat was alive. And I decided to take a guitar lesson with him because he lived there had for years. So I went over... I didn't sleep a wink that night, and in the morning I took an Uber over to his house, and we hung out, and he was so cool. And to be honest, it was the most inspiring moment for me because rather than him teach me anything musically, which, you know, he did as well, but what I got out of it was the fact that he... There was this living legend who was so kind of defined by this jazz guitar instrument that he played. Just being in his presence gave me the permission to be that guy or to aspire to be that guy, if that even means anything. For instance, I'd played different guitars in the past, Fender Strats, acoustic guitars, you know. And it's a terrible tendency to kind of... want to make music with all these instruments and different sounds, but and then not really be clearly defined as to who you are. Whereas Pat gave me, just being in his presence, gave me the permission to say, you know what, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be a jazz guitar player and I'm going to own it. I don't have to make any excuses for it.
Wow.
And it was the most revelatory minute in my life. And, you know, I thought I was going there to find out how to play over A7, you know, altered or whatever it is. It was just fantastic, and I've never forgotten it. And I immediately put all the other guitars away, and I just ended up playing this one jazz guitar. That's the best decision I ever made.
Wow, wonderful story.
And what's more, he was so nice. He came to my show that night.
Oh.
And it was just fantastic, you know. And just a couple of years later, he died. Very sad. Lovely guy.
We're going to close today with another song from the new album, a track called All the Good Times. Another great tune. Really terrific guitar again. Before I let you go and we play that one, share with the audience first, Chris, all about this one, if you would, please.
Yes, well, this is a perfect example of this nostalgic vibe I keep talking about on this new record, Time of Change. And it might have been one of the earliest songs I wrote that just made me think of, like, maybe 1982, you know? And all the music I was listening to at that point, it just, you know, there's a little Earth, Wind & Fire there. There's a little Casino Lights. I don't know if you know that album, Live in Montreux, which I think was 1982 with people like David Sanborn and Al Jarreau, Randy Crawford. And just the way that record was produced and arranged just got under my skin. And even though listening to this track, you probably wouldn't know any of that or hear it, But that's what's in my mind. It's got all those lovely childhood memories, you know.
I like it. Yeah, I can picture you putting yourself back into that era and just letting the song come to you, as you said at the beginning of the show when you talked about Hollywood Hustle.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Chris, congratulations again on the new album. Hope to see you out on the road. Love your playing. And this was such an enjoyable conversation. I really appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Bruce. I love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to guitarist, recording artist, producer, songwriter, and arranger Chris Standring. Again, visit his official website at chrisstandring.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talking today about Time of Change, his new album just released last month. His albums are available on his website, CD, vinyl, and or digital download. Do go see this man perform live. Lots of tour dates for Chris coming up from May to October, from the west coast of the United States to the east coast and other points in between. Check the tour section of chrisstandring.com for those dates and those locations. Social media-wise, look at the bottom of his website for logos, links. Last night, I followed Chris on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. For that matter, tell Chris you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Remember, too, about the YouTube channel and the Sunday Lives with his wife. And yes, do join the more than 316,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. Give Chris a follow there as well. That will do it for episode 636. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Chris Standring. This is the one he just talked about. It's called All the Good Times.